Hey guys, it's time for Nina's Got Good News. Nina's a former TV news gal who used to share all the news. Now, as a mom and small businesswoman, she wants to share only the good stuff. It's time to brighten your day. So here's your host, Nina B. Clark.
Hi everyone, how are you? This is Nina B. Clark, your host of Nina's Got Good News, and we are back with a brand new episode. I am so excited about today's episode. Whew, I can't wait to bring this one to you. Thank you guys for showing up. Thank you for being here. Please, I have a huge favor. Please subscribe and follow Nina's Got Good News. No matter what platform you're listening to this now, if you're listening, please hit that subscribe or follow button. I would really, really appreciate that. Also, please consider rating and reviewing this podcast as well, because that is how we can keep growing. Thank you guys so much. You guys are the best. And please consider sharing this episode with a friend, especially today's episode. Today's episode really needs to be shared. Thank you all so much for supporting positive content. You guys are the best. So April is here. It's officially here. Happy April, everyone. That means spring is officially underway. And we are hoping that the sun is going to start to peek out soon here in Connecticut. Can't wait for that. We've been staying very busy with a lot of lacrosse with our two teenagers, Charlie and Blaine, which has been a lot of fun. Speaking of family, today's episode is brought to you by one of my favorite family-owned and family-run brands, Mary Ruth's Organics. Mary Ruth herself is an important resource for all of us when it comes to our overall health and wellness. This is the only brand of vitamins and supplements that we use in our house. You guys know I talk about this brand all the time. Please be sure to check out all of their products for the entire family. They have so many great options for your family to help boost your immunity and stay healthy. Charlie and Blaine take these every day. And now, so does my husband. That's right. Jeff Clark is taking these vitamins as well. If you go to MaryRuthsOrganics.com and use my promo code GOODNEWS, you will save money at checkout. Again, MaryRuthsOrganics.com and use my promo code GOODNEWS, you will save money at checkout. All that information, by the way, is going to be in the show notes as well. So if you missed any of that, the link or the promo code, go to the bottom of this episode and check out the show notes. Okay, so drum roll, please. Now on to episode 115. One of my dream guests is here today, you guys. This is a pinch me moment for sure. Fun fact, I put this guest on my vision board for 2024, and then I put in the work to make this interview happen. And here we are today. So today, my vision becomes my reality. In this episode, we are going to be focusing on women's health, hormone changes, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. However, if you are a guy listening right now, we are begging you to keep listening. We need you to listen. We need all the men in this important discussion because there is a woman in your life who needs you to hear what we are going to be talking about today. We have the number one menopause doctor in the country here with us today, Dr. Mary Claire Haver. She has devoted her entire adult life to women's health. I love this woman so much. Dr. Haver is a wife and a mother and a board certified OBGYN. She's also an entrepreneur who runs her own private medical practice in Texas. Her first book, The Galveston Diet, was a national bestseller. And now she is coming out with a brand new blockbuster book, The New Menopause, later this month. You can pre-order her new book, The New Menopause, through the links down in the show notes below this episode. It's an amazing book. I've already read it. You guys are going to love it. For the millions and millions of us who follow Dr. Haver on social media, we all adore her and we all appreciate her so much for filling the gaping hole in menopause care. She is helping so many of us, including yours truly, myself. We are all so grateful for all her help as we all try to thrive during the hormonal transition and beyond. To put it mildly, everyone loves Mary Claire Haver. So do not forget to share this episode with your friends and family. This is such an important interview and all of our health matters that much. Please consider sharing this episode. Now, for this important legal disclaimer, this podcast episode represents the opinions of our guests and our experiences. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. The content here is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult your own healthcare professional for any medical questions. Okay, Without further ado, on to my dream guest of 2024. Here is my recent conversation with Dr. Mary Claire Haver from Texas. And Dr. Mary Claire Haver joins me now from Texas. Hello, Dr. Haver. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks.
Oh, it's so good to see you. First of all, before we even start, I just want to say we all love you so much, and we don't even really know you personally, but we feel like we all do. And I just want to say thank you on behalf of all women out there, but especially all my friends who adore you so much. We all follow you. You've helped us so much. And I'm sure you hear that every day, but I just can't start this without saying a huge thank you to you from all the women. And congratulations on the new book. I finished it. It's so good. It's going to be next to my bed at all times as like my bedside reading. It's just so good. And I just felt like it was therapy for me, for someone who's going through menopause right now. It was so therapeutic. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you. And congratulations. How is everything going for you?
Great. You know, the book was born out of, I had written Galveston Diet. You know, I actually put that program together in 2018, and we didn't publish the book till last year. But, you know, what began with me having a conversation about nutrition and menopause and weight gain just kind of exploded as my research was growing into bigger conversations around cardiovascular disease, sleep, dementia, you know, all the things and how they're all interrelated and how we can intervene so we don't end up like our mothers, you know, if that's possible, if that's something you want, desperately something I want. Love my mother, but she's demented and has had a walker for 10 years. And if I don't make these changes right now, it's going to dramatically affect my kids' lives in the future. I don't want to do that. So I wrote the menopause, the new menopause, because of you guys, you know, of y'all asking me all these questions over and over again. I'm like, okay, people, the videos only hit people catch as catch can. And this is going to be a consolidated resource for people to be able to navigate their menopause as healthy as possible. And honestly, you know, we did all the research last year, and then you have to write and edit. I could add 4 more chapters right now. The research is really starting to explode, and I'm already working the revisions in my head. We haven't even published yet.
You're already on part 2. I love that. Well, so why did you decide to hyper-focus on menopause care as a doctor? Because you had a successful doctor in your old life before, and now you're hyper-focused on menopause care. Why did you decide to make that change?
It was a leap of faith, really. I was not happy in my old job. I was happy with patients. I love patient care, but the hours, like I was in my 50s or late 40s, and the hours were killing me, the deliveries in the middle of the night and then having to be on call the next day. Like, there still isn't a reasonable work-life balance, especially as I was getting older and less resilient. Plus the administrative burden, you know, nothing with my bosses, but the hospital systems are hiring every single pencil pusher and all these levels of bureaucracy. And it was just making my life miserable. And so I had left that and become a hospitalist, and then COVID hit. And so I could go part-time. And then through COVID, I worked more hours, longer. I was happy to be doing something productive. So I don't, you know, it was a good time in my life, but it was also horrible hours again. 24-hour shifts were about to kill me. And you know, no doctor needs to be up for 24 hours trying to do surgery and make patient decisions. And that is just the fault of the system. And so I thought, what do I do next? What's my next thing? And I knew my heart was telling me there's such a gap in women who need this care and the gap of knowledge. And I had gone on my own and researched and studied and learned all this stuff. And I even took my girlfriends out to dinner and was like, okay, do you think this clinic would work? You know, like this is a big jump for me. I've always been employed. I show up with a stethoscope. They sit me down at a computer. I have a nurse and I start seeing patients. This was me building a clinic from scratch with no template. Like, I could build whatever. My husband was like, do it. You've talked about this. This is your passion. This is your drive. If you fail, you fail, but you're never going to know until you try. So, and I was already reading all the time, researching all the time, talking only about menopause, and it just made sense. Well, of course, the clinic has been ridiculously successful. I don't use the traditional insurance model. I can't, because I have to spend an hour with my patients in order for them to unpack their menopause trauma. and, you know, get to the root of what they need and all the options available. And so my clinic is cash pay, but, you know, that also fuels my bigger mission, which is to continue to educate and offer resources and hopefully push the medical societies to make menopause care a real medical thing.
I know, wouldn't that be so nice and so welcoming, right? For all of us, we need that. It seems like right now, you know, menopause is having this moment, but do you think that our moms and our grandmothers suffered the way we're all suffering, or are we just all talking about it more? Like,
we're talking about it more. Trust me. Our grandmothers may or may not have had access to hormone therapy. Remember, women were on hormone therapy. About 40% of women were on hormone replacement therapy in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Okay. So the people with the most severe symptoms were treated. It was in 2002 that they were abruptly removed, which is most of our mother's generation. Mm-hmm. So it's really our moms who had the rug pulled out from under them. Now, if you look back historically, up until about 150 years ago, we didn't live much past our natural menopause. Women died in their 50s and 60s. That was a normal occurrence. I mean, of course, there's the occasional woman who made it, but you know, our lifespan has increased. But now you can expect to live 30 years as a menopausal person. And so our mothers, so the women who are now in their 80s, 70s, late 60s lost the opportunity to have hormone therapy because of the Women's Health Initiative, mm-hmm. and except in severe cases or having to go to these back alley clinics to get pellets and whatnot. This generation suffered terribly. And look back, there were terms like hysteria, you know, mm-hmm. all of the misogyny that's built into the system and the paternalism. Trust me, these people were suffering. They just didn't talk about it and they suffered in silence. And our generation is not willing to do that.
Right. We found our voice. And we're not going to be quiet.
No. And you have money and you have education and you have, wait a minute, when you look at the funding, you know, women's health funding is vastly about reproduction, important mm-hmm. stuff. But what about us? I'm spending as much time in my life as a postmenopausal person as I was a reproductive age person.
Right.
And why is this part of my life less important, where I get a smidge of the research funding, education, brain power? We can intervene at this time of our lives and make just as much as an impact as we can in pregnancy.
Yep. Well, so let's rewind a little bit to perimenopause, because I was in perimenopause until just recently when I started this. Now I'm in menopause, but perimenopause, explain to everyone, how long does that usually last? And most importantly, how do you even know when you're perimenopause? Well, like, is there a test you can take?
So let's go way back. Let's go back to when we were growing inside of our mom's uteruses. So in your mom's tummy, you are 5 months in utero. Okay. You've got 4 months to go on your pregnancy and before you're born, for most of us. That is the maximum eggs you ever have in your life. Okay. Is in utero, and they start deteriorating and declining from that point. At birth, we have between 1 to 2 million eggs in our ovaries, and we're stuck with them for the rest till they deplete. Okay. Menopause signals the depletion of all of your germ cells in medicine. That's your egg cells for females. By the time we're 30, we're down to about 10% of our egg supply. And by the time we're 40, we're down to 3%.
Wow.
Which is why fertility decreases as we mm-hmm. age, why chromosomal abnormalities, because the quality and the quantity of the eggs are declining. So menopause signals you're out of eggs, you're done, and you'll never have another period or be able to get pregnant. Perimenopause. So when we look at our ovulation cycles, most women know what that is, right? So we have an egg gets released. We have a buildup. Well, we have a buildup of estrogen, of hormones stimulating the ovaries to get this egg to release. We lose about 11,000 eggs to get one to ovulate. It's like a race. So the hormones stimulate and one of them wins, or one or two for twins. And then the egg pops out and then you develop a corpus luteum. So this is a very predictable hormonal fluctuation cycle that repeats month after month after month in a healthy person. Okay. We do that until perimenopause in a very predictable cycle. At the beginning of perimenopause, we reach a critical threshold of egg quality and quantity where the same signals that were very predictable every month can no longer stimulate the ovulation reliably. So the brain is like, hey, I told you we need some estrogen. We need an egg to develop. And the ovary's like, I'm trying. So the pituitary gland pushes more LH and more FSH out to try to get this to happen. And then boom, we have a release of that egg. And we have these wild fluctuations in our estrogen and progesterone levels. Progesterone usually gets delayed. It's not as robust. Estrogen is all over the place. We get 3-4 times high normal values, and then it plummets to way lower than we would have in a baseline. That's perimenopause, the beginning of hormonal chaos on our way to the end of our eggs. And it's all because the brain is constantly sensing for estrogen in the hypothalamus. And then when it sees that it's low, it sends a signal to the pituitary, hey, get that ovary to wake up and give us what we need. And the ovary just can't anymore. So in that hormonal zone of chaos, that is perimenopause. You can predict symptoms 7 to 10 years before your period stops. And those symptoms can affect every single organ system of our body. Okay, 90% of us will have dysfunctional uterine bleeding, meaning abnormal periods, not normal for you. Too heavy, too light, too long, too short, cramps, no cramps, PMS, no PMS. I mean, it's just
all over the place. Yeah.
And on that slog to stopping forever. Okay. That's what most people don't understand. Men, males, they make their stuff fresh every day from puberty till death. They are a constant factory, just always making new sperm cells. Okay. Now it gets a little harder as they get older. They have a slow decline in testosterone, about 1% a year. It affects more some men more than others. But for us, 100% of us will have ovarian failure if you live long enough. And it's a very harsh term, but it is literally the failure of the ovary to be able to produce estrogen or progesterone. Mm-hmm. That is perimenopause and menopause in a nutshell, and your basic endocrinology lesson, if that helps.
Wow, but I can't believe it can be 10 years. Perimenopause can go 10 years. That's crazy. And then can you get your blood work done? And then those levels will tell you if you're in perimenopause?
Great question. In perimenopause, there is no predictable one-time blood, urine, or saliva test that is going to be diagnostic. Those of us in the menopause, like those of us who focus on menopause care, who talk every day, who are constantly trading articles back and forth in our group chats and are always educating each other, we do not check hormone levels in perimenopause because they are unpredictable, expensive, and not reliable. We listen to our patients.
Okay. So it's more about your symptoms.
We believe our patients. If she's had an ablation or an hysterectomy or was born without a uterus or some, you know, I'll check hormone levels for multiple different reasons, but it's not a routine test we should do in perimenopause. Now, I'm doing a lot of blood work. I'm checking thyroid levels, nutritional markers, inflammation labs, making sure, because a lot of things can cross-react or, you know, symptoms can be very similar across different disease states. So we want to make sure we're not missing anything, but it's almost always perimenopause. And we have scoring systems for this that have been validated. They're just not really used in clinical practice.
Okay. So that's peri. And then we move on to menopause.
Menopause is one day in your life.
Yeah.
1 year after your last menstrual period, which is a terrible definition, by the way.
Yep.
You don't have periods. And then the rest of your life, you are a postmenopausal person dealing with the lack of estrogen and progesterone and declining testosterone in your body.
Okay. So let's talk about some things we can do. So let's start with food. What are the foods if we're either in peri or we're in menopause or postmenopause, what are the foods that we should be eating? We want to go to the grocery store and know what to be doing.
Right.
Or what to order.
Before I get into that, let me be clear. Nothing's going to bring your ovaries back to life. There's no food cure for menopause. This is an endocrinological failure that is going to happen no matter what you do. What good nutrition, good exercise, and good habits do is make your body's reaction to this deprivation an easier row for you to hoe and with less metabolic consequences. Okay. So the pillars of health, nutrition, exercise still apply here, but we're not going to delay or cure your menopause. So,
right.
Okay.
These are just things that will help. Be helpful.
Will help you feel better. And
as you call it, the toolkit. We got to get the toolkit ready.
Okay. Yep. So nutrition, protein. Okay. Forever. Me. I ate to be thin. Everything in my body, everything in my world was work out to be thin, eat to be thin, not to be strong. And that was a huge mistake. I never focused on protein. I didn't care about protein. I cared about calories. I did not focus on my nutrition because if I was thin, that meant healthy. And that has warped the health of women long-term. When we look at longevity and we live longer than men, 4 to 6 years, but we are spending 20% of that life in poorer health than our male counterparts. We are twice as likely to need long-term nursing home care. It's, you look in a nursing home right now, it's 60%, 66% women, 33% men, and the women are frail.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing you can do to decrease your risk of frailty and the need for long-term care as you age, protein and resistance training. So making your meals protein-centric, really focusing on protein. At US FDA recommends 0.8 grams for every kilogram of your healthy body weight. It should be double that. So when the WHI study, there is good information that came out of WHI. And one thing they did was look at frailty and how much protein and intake would decrease the risk of frailty. And it was 1.2 to 1.3 or, you know, 1.6. And the women who had 1.6 or greater were the healthiest. So there's definitely something tied to good, complete protein intake and a healthier woman as she ages. So that's really the first thing. The second is watching your added sugars.
Mm-hmm.
Added in cooking and processing and really limiting processed foods as much as possible. Of course, we all get into situations or have an occasional whatever, but you know, women who limit those added sugars to less than 25 grams per day have less visceral fat, less diabetes, are healthier, really, really do better. Eating foods rich in probiotics, so yogurt, miso, kimchi, kombucha, you know, those type of diets do really, really well. There's, a, you know, that Mediterranean style anti-inflammatory nutrition, legumes, grain, you know, whole grains with fiber, fruits, vegetables, lean meats, seafood, all of that is just super good for you, super healthy, and will keep you healthier longer.
So protein, less sugar, and fiber. Okay. So just want to make sure we all have that on our-
You're going to count that. I tell my patients, they're like, I'm so overwhelmed. I'm like, two things, fiber and protein.
Okay. Let's talk about our workouts because you did mention that. So I'm just like you now. I'm all about the strength training. It's kind of a combo for me, strength training, cardio, and walking. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you if we should do this podcast with our weighted vests on. So here's mine.
Come on.
we're all crazy. I call you my bestie. I think you're like me. We do the 12 pounds, right?
This is a 12. Yeah.
So here we are. We're besties. So tell us why, first of all, why did you and I waste so much time on cardio?
There's so much pressure socially, you know, generationally to be thin, my mother commenting on my weight. I did it to my children. I've apologized 1,000 times. And now we just talk about being strong and, you know,
strong as in skinny. I love that.
And so strength over skinny. And when I looked at the data, you know, it's my nursing home prevention program. As I'm, my mother's on a walker with dementia, my grandmother spent 5 years decrepit in a bed with dementia, drooling on herself. I don't want that. Okay. Some of the best data was looking at nursing home or long-term care facilities, occupants, women in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and they threw weighted vests on them and had them do vibratory training and they saw improvements in their osteoporosis.
Oh, and I love that.
Wearing a weighted vest, just doing household activities is an easy cheat to go walk your dog, to go do whatever, but it is putting just enough stress and you should start with about 10% of your body weight, of your ideal body weight. So for me, I'm only 120 pounds. So I started with an 8 because I didn't know any better and I hadn't read the amounts and I was scared to hurt myself. 8 was nothing. It's like 2-4 pounds. But if
you're at 12,
start with an 8, but you know, 12 was more appropriate for everyday activities and just wearing it for long periods of time to stimulate muscle mass. Also, you burn a few more calories and you build muscle when you do it.
Yeah. I love this thing. It's like, I feel so, and it actually has been keeping me warm here in Connecticut because it's still cold. So it's like that extra layer, but I love it. The other day someone saw me and they're like, oh my God, what's in your backpack? I'm like, no, this is no backpack. This is me trying to be strong because I've seen too many older relatives, including my mom, when they can't get off the toilet because they're, you know, sick or they've fallen. And I'm determined that is not going to happen. So you and me, Dr. Haver, we are not going to let that happen. So, okay. So we're going to do our daily walks with our vests. We're going to do strength training,
creatine,
and a little bit of cardio.
Cardio is important for cardiovascular fitness, of course. But most women, if they're doing anything, they're doing cardio, even a brisk walk. Listen, if you're on the couch, if your listeners are on the couch, let's go for a walk. If you're walking, grab a lightweighted vest. You know, slowly work your way up, but realize, look, it's so much easier for me to work out now because from not motivation, but just because I'm not doing it to be thin, because that you're like, oh, I'm doing it. I don't look
at
it. Look, I'm 55 years old. It does not look the same as it did at 25. And that's okay. I'm like, I'm staying out of the nursing home is what's going through my head now. And it's made the biggest difference.
Yep. I love that. We should all like put that on our fridge, right? Like a picture of the nursing home with a big X on it. That's not going to be us. Okay. So we've talked about nutrition. We've talked about our exercise. Let's talk a little bit about supplements. What supplements do you recommend that we should all be taking if we're in peri or if we're in menopause or postmenopause?
So before you start any supplement, you should, as a personal experiment, download a free nutrition tracker. My favorite is Chronometer. It's Chronometer. We have a paid version, but the free one's fine for this. So you just track what you eat. Eat healthy for 2 weeks and look to see on a daily basis. Look at your fiber, your vitamin D, look at your magnesium, look at your calcium, and look at your protein. Those are kind of the five areas and see where you could make improvements. And so my protein goals are 100 to 120 grams per day. Quite often I will supplement with a shake or a bar or something to help me kind of get over the hump. Creatine, great studies in elderly women. So I'm almost elderly by medical definition is 65 or older.
And you got 10 years to get there. You're okay.
Well, I'll be 56. So I'm nine.
Okay.
I'm reaching up. So about a little over 9 years to get there. And I'm like, okay. So creatine has been shown to be helpful. It's really well tolerated. Turmeric can be really, if you're suffering from arthritis or musculoskeletal pain of menopause, turmeric has been shown to be helpful. Of course, hormone therapy, incredibly helpful on every aspect of the metabolic, cardiometabolic changes of menopause. But again, not for everyone, or you may not choose it. So we have all the other things. Vitamin D, 80% of my patients are deficient in vitamin D. That is something really hard to get through nutrition. So I recommend routine supplementation from that. But again, supplements don't take the place of good nutrition.
Yep.
You can't swallow a handful of pills and go to McDonald's and think that you've done anything to help yourself. You know, they are just adjuvant to good whole food nutrition.
Okay. Let's talk about the A word, alcohol.
Woo. It's a big risk for frailty. You know, women tend to drink less than men. Mm-hmm. But the ones who do drink, especially older, are in the abuse level. And so, you know, alcohol abuse, more than two drinks a day, basically, is shown to have increased risk of frailty. You're not eating as healthfully. You're not sleeping as well. So one thing that I've seen, and more emerging research is coming, that myself and my patients are really struggling with sleep with even one glass. You know, not everyone. There's the occasional person who's lucky and drink all she wants and sleep like a baby. But most women are really sacrificing their sleep if they choose to drink, especially at night before they go to bed, which is when most people would have a glass of wine or something with dinner. And so, you know, I have to really be cognizant and talk to my patients that, you know, when I choose to drink, I am making the choice and I'm not going to sleep as well.
Even one drink.
For me, even one. If it's early in the evening, yeah, five or six, like, you know, pre-dinner kind of thing, I'll be fine by 10 o'clock at night. You know, it has to get completely out of my system. But even then, you know, I wear the Oura ring, my heart rate doesn't go down, even with one drink. You know, I might sleep, but I'm not having as deep, restful sleep with, you know, I'm not getting as high of a sleep score.
So maybe it'd be better for us to have a drink during the day.
That's the joke.
If we want to go out for like a birthday lunch, we should go out for lunch.
Switch to day drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. The darty. Dr. Haber, we're going to be dartying with our
menopause darty. The Marty.
Darty.
So.
Right. So maybe a drink earlier is better. Okay. All right. I mean, I'm personally doing like half a drink. That's how fun I've become. But good news for me is I'm actually still funny even when I'm not drinking. Drinking isn't, that doesn't really change my personality. But I do the occasional, now I do like the half drink because I'm like you, if I have a drink later in the evening, I'm the same as you. I'm up. It's not that I can't fall asleep. It's that I wake up at like 2:30, 3 in the morning because of the, and I'm like, wait, what just happened?
Boom. And the and only then you thing can't I can go think back of, to sleep.
Yeah. It's know? The, it's that I had a drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, it's brutal. Okay. So why are we struggling so much with sleep and what can we do? Is that where you talked about like getting the magnesium in?
So magnesium can be really helpful for calming,
yeah.
You know, settling down racing thoughts for some patients at night. Yep. It's the magnesium L-threonate is good for SSRI resistant depression and different things, but you know, menopause in and of itself through the vasomotor symptoms, the hot flashes, the palpitations, the night sweats are sleep disruptive in their own. But so say you're on it, even me on HRT, no more hot flashes. Like I'm totally controlled. I still don't sleep like I used to. And I really have to be, make sure that room is cooled down to 65 mm-hmm. degrees, make sure the lights are off, make sure, you know, all the sleep hygiene things, I can't take it for granted because I'm going to increase my risk of frailty and chronic disease if I don't prioritize my sleep.
Yeah. Sleep is huge. And also too, like the phone at night, I mm-hmm. feel like that's why
light. We should want it off too.
You
to
should
3 hours.
Read your book, like a real book, not a Kindle.
Yeah.
Read the real book and then fall
my
asleep.
My problem is I have my Kindle on my phone.
I know, so. But see, that's, yeah, we've got to, I know. See all these things we have to think about and get the phone out of the bedroom, right? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to put it in the other room. So things we can all work on. This is good. So let's talk a little bit about how the media got it so wrong in 2002. We've talked about this earlier where you mentioned the WHI, the study that came out in 2002. And then all of a sudden there was this hysteria that anyone on hormone replacement therapy was going to, you know, have an increased chance of getting breast cancer. And the media sort of blew that up. So how do you think the media got that so wrong?
So the principal authors of the Women's Health Initiative study, which was the largest women's health study in the world. Okay. So it was so wonderful. They were finally, we knew from observational data, which is not conclusive, that women on hormone therapy had lower risk of cardiovascular disease, lower osteoporosis, and lower lots of other things. But they wanted to prove it. In order to prove it medically, you have to have a randomized controlled study. The endpoint was, does HRT decrease your risk of cardiovascular disease or not? Or was this patient artifact? Because these people who on HRT tend to be wealthier, healthier, whiter, you know, have less genetic risk factors for certain things. And so they recruit 27,000 patients with uteruses, without uteruses. They started with an older population because the end point was cardiovascular disease. And so the average age of the patient was 63. Mm. They had patients from 49 to 79, 40, you know, so a wide range, but the most were much older than the typical patient who would be starting hormone replacement therapy, and put them on hormones, estrogen, if they had a uterus, estrogen plus a progestogen, or placebo, and they were blinded. The doctors didn't know, the patients didn't know. They all got pills that looked the same. And then they started recording. And then people without a uterus from hysterectomy were given estrogen only or placebo. Mm. So in the estrogen and progesterone arm, after a couple of years on the study, 3 years maybe, they started noticing what seemed to be an increased risk of breast cancer versus placebo. Now, the baseline risk of breast cancer, and I hope I have these numbers correct, was about 4 out of 1,000 women per year at each age, okay, on average. That's placebo. Then that went to 5 out of 1,000 women per year with the combined hormone therapy. That did represent a relative risk of 25% increase from 4 out of 1,000 to 5 out of 1,000. Absolute risk is 0.08%, less than 1%, okay? But what got reported to the press, they stopped this. So these principal investigators hold a press conference. This was unheard of. Okay. Mm. They went to the Watergate Hotel in DC, hold this huge press conference saying estrogen causes breast cancer, 25% increased risk. It was the number one medical news story of 2002. Mm-hmm. When 80% of women threw their prescriptions in the trash, it was picked up by every major newspaper, every major, it was the cover of everything. It was like a bomb went off in OBGYN. Women were terrified that they were going to get breast cancer. No one explained absolute versus relative risk. The estrogen only arm went on for a couple more years and was stopped due to what they perceived as an increased risk of stroke. So all of a sudden, and they showed no improvement in the risk of cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. So that was 23 years ago now. Okay. Or 21 years ago now.
Yeah.
22. And they followed those women. They took them off the meds, but they kept following them. And they've re-looked at the data and rehashed it and separated it out by age. And what they found was there is cardiovascular benefit, but there's a window of opportunity. The younger you are when you start hormone therapy, the closer to your natural menopause that you start, natural or surgical or chemotherapeutic, whatever it is, the lower your risk of heart disease, as much as 50% per year.
Okay. Do cardiologists, are they talking about this? I mean, are
it
they
was putting... published in Circulation Magazine, which is the Journal of the American Heart Association in 2020. So hopefully, but it,
because that's huge news.
Research article to common practice is a 17-year gap.
Okay. So we have some time.
We have time before this is going to be common knowledge and propagated. There are plenty of cardiologists out there.
So in other words, if you're, as soon as you know you're in menopause, if you are able, if you are a candidate for HRT, you should be thinking about this as far as
for the cardioprotective benefits.
Okay.
Also for the neuroprotective benefits.
And also for osteoporosis.
And it's FDA approved for osteoporosis treatment.
Okay.
We knew it.
For me, my mother is a heart patient. For me, since that's in my genetics, it's good news that I'm on HRT because that's going to help me with this heart disease situation. Okay. Right. That's huge news. And I really do hope that cardiologists and women everywhere are asking their cardiologists and cardiologists are talking about this because that's really important.
Here's the other thing, and I don't want to freak people out, that the AHA published, okay, in Circulation Magazine in 2020. And this is well known in my circles. There is a risk factor for increasing cholesterol through the menopause transition. So probably 80% of your followers had an unexplained increase in their cholesterol levels, bad cholesterol and good cholesterol, you know, decreasing HDL, rising LDL, ApoB and ApoB with no changes in diet and exercise. And they were immediately suggested to go on a statin. Statins in women have never been shown to stop a heart attack or death from a heart attack. They will lower cholesterol, but will not decrease your risk of cardiovascular disease or death from cardiovascular disease. The only medic, neither aspirin or a beta blocker, as only in men, but we're routinely recommending it for women. This is one of the most egregious examples of, we are not little men. Why are you not testing things on us or giving us recommendations based on our gender and, or on our sex? And guess what decreases your risk of a heart attack or death from heart disease?
HRT.
HRT. So, yeah.
So hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are some of my most popular videos on social media. And I have a lot of cardiologists getting pissed off at me because they didn't know.
Well, I mean, you know, you're spreading the awareness and you're educating them. And if they take a deeper dive, then they're going to realize that.
And many are
something here.
Many are. Some of the big social media cardiologists are like, she's right. I'm like, I don't make this stuff up. Everything I say has a study behind it because I value my reputation.
Of course. Good for you. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about brain fog because I swear, I tell all my friends, I swear I used to be smart. So Dr. Haver, why are we forgetting so much? Why all of a sudden do I feel like I'm not smart anymore? Like, what happened?
So our brains completely rewire in perimenopause and menopause. Lisa Moscone wrote two incredible books, The Double X Brain and The Menopause Brain. If you are at risk for dementia and Alzheimer's because of a family history, you need to read this book. She lays out, just like I do, but like really does a deep dive with nutritional therapies, exercise, like all the things that you can do to decrease your risk and what the role of hormone therapy may be for you. But our brains completely rewire. Now, the good news about most women with brain fog is it's worse in perimenopause, and it does tend to get better and stabilize a little bit. You'll never quite go back to your cognitive functioning that you had, but really you're going to be okay unless you're on the path to dementia and Alzheimer's, because they start at the same time. Remember, dementia is a disease of midlife that has symptoms in old age. It starts now for us.
Okay. I'm just glad that you said it's going to be better.
Yeah, it does tend to get better. Now,
I'm holding on to that.
Stuff you can do hormone therapy, you know, but I still find myself in the car like, where am I going? Yeah, you know, right? So, you know, remember, nothing's better than our 25-year-old ovaries.
Right.
Goes back in. Yep. So we haven't figured that out yet. So until HRT is a poor cousin to what our ovaries did on their own, because there's minor estrogens and all kind of other stuff going on. It's this beautiful symphony that we have, and that just stops. And so HRT can do a lot, but it's not going to be perfect.
Okay. And are you, a lot of people were asking me, are you, since you're on HRT and now so am I, are you planning on taking HRT forever? Or is that like an individual thing?
If I don't develop a contraindication, like an estrogen, you know, a tumor that is estrogen dependent or something, I will continue on estrogen, and I have to have progesterone because I've squeaked out of my menopause with my uterus intact. And I also am on testosterone. And the other thing I'm starting new, like next week, cause it's being shipped right now, is vaginal estrogen. I did really good till like 56.
Yeah.
Then it's just, I'm just starting to feel some irritation, and I'm like, okay, it's time, you know? Okay. So it's perfectly reasonable for a patient to do both local and systemic estrogen.
Okay. And maybe you, and potentially you could be on this forever. Okay. Now, speaking of the vaginal estrogen, let's talk a little bit about Halle Berry, because she was recently in the news for a major misdiagnosis that she discussed. So tell us, like, why, you know, how did that go so wrong? I mean, the doctor told her and her boyfriend that they had herpes.
Perfect storm. She had severe atrophic vaginal. Well, we now know is genital urinary syndrome of menopause, and she had no idea. And she goes to have relations with this new boyfriend, and probably, you know, we can make some assumptions about maybe it had been a while and maybe didn't automatically have a lubricant or whatever. And, really just got torn up. The tissue of the vagina, bladder, urethra, the vulva, the labia, all of the genital urinary system is highly dependent on estrogen for its health. We lose elasticity, we lose thickness, we lose the ability to create mucus, we lose our barrier to protection from UTIs. And so any kind of activity in the area can cause inflammation, irritation, and that's what happened to her. Mm-hmm. So she goes to the doctor and he just sees a macerated vagina, is what I'm assuming a lot here, and says, oh, this looks like herpes. Of course she flips out. I mean, no woman wants to hear that, even though 25% of us have it and have had it at some point. It's nothing to be ashamed of, but that it wasn't even considered that it could be menopause, and she just needed some time off with some vaginal estrogen therapy and she would have been perfectly fine, is outrageous. And that is due to the lack of education and knowledge in our medical training systems, and one of the biggest things I'm fighting against.
Right. But the good news about her putting out that story is I feel like it's just, again, spreading this awareness that you've been so good about doing as well. I love that. So I asked a lot of my Instagram followers to send in some questions. So let's just do a quick rapid fire. What causes a hot flash? Someone asked.
Yeah. So we have a thermoregulatory center in our hypothalamus that is basically controls our body temperature. It goes up when we have a fever, like we have infections, these cytokines are created and the cytokines go to the hypothalamus and it raises our body temperature, and it's a way to fight off infection. So that temperature gauge is really sensitive to estrogen. And when the estrogen levels decline, it just starts glitching. And the best way I can explain it. So so the new medicine like Veozah binds to those receptors, you know, creating a more calm pathway to decrease the hot flashes. So it's really just the firing of your thermoregulatory center in the brain due to the lack of estrogen and progesterone.
Okay. How often do you suggest we get blood work taken? Do you do that once a year?
No. For what?
Like when you're in peri, or if you think you're in peri,
never in perimenopause, never routinely in perimenopause, and never, never, never. You need a doctor who knows what they're doing. And in postmenopause, when do I draw hormones? If I don't think she's absorbing, you know, like most of my patients are on some kind of a transdermal form due to this improved safety profile for most patients. And so she's still symptomatic despite being on the highest doses of the patch. I'm going to send a level. Maybe she's not a great absorber. I didn't absorb the spray very well. I tried it, thought, oh, this will be great. Hot flash within 3 weeks, check my levels. I didn't absorb it. I absorbed the patch, no problem. Who knew? You know, so I must have really, I don't know, something wrong with my skin. So So I'll check a level for them. If they are, if we're not seeing the response to their cholesterol mm-hmm. as much as I would want, just, you know, they're eating right, they're doing all the things, and we put them on HRT and they're still not having that nice come down from their LDL, then I'll send a level to see, you know, maybe she needs more to get her hot flashes are better if we use those as a gauge, but you know, she may need more. So we'll check an FSH and some levels, but it is not something we ever want to check routinely, because really we don't have therapeutic levels established. Until we have that, it's worthless.
Okay. No, that's so helpful. Also, someone wrote in asking what can be done about thinning hair or hair loss, while some others wrote in asking about new facial hair that shows up.
Yay.
What's going on there?
Usually, there's male pattern baldness and there's female pattern baldness. Male pattern baldness is usually thinning in the temples.
Yeah.
I don't have that, but you know, here, and like receding hairline, like a man would have. And some hair loss is genetic. Some, you know, there's multiple causes, vitamin deficiencies, infections, et cetera. If you're having significant hair loss, go to a dermatologist. Mm-hmm. You need to go, I can't diagnose a fungus. That's what they do. And so, if it's female pattern baldness, which is what we typically see in later menopause, the part tends to get whiter. You know, you're kind of losing hair everywhere. That responds to Rogaine responds to everything. So for my patients, I've got my Lumibox. We've got red light therapy, which I use all over my body, my face, my neck, and my head. I do use Rogaine for female pattern baldness. If it's male pattern, then you need some of the anti-androgens. So that could be spironolactone, things that bind the skin receptor for dihydrotestosterone. So we have a lot of therapeutic options, but they can get complicated. I have a YouTube video that's like 45 minutes long on all this. It's okay. Not the answer. Nutrition deficiencies, we need to do blood work. There's a lot of things that need to be checked out if you're having hair loss.
Okay. One of my friends asked, what's the difference between bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and regular
HRT? Nothing. I mean, okay. Bioidentical means, okay, no, let me say that more correct. Bioidentical means that it is chemically identical to the estradiol and progesterone or estrone or estriol that your body made. Estradiol is the main hormone made in the ovaries. It is the dominant estrogen of our reproductive lives, okay? Estrone is made from the peripheral conversion, usually in fat cells. And then estriol is what is created in the placenta. Some compounding companies decide to throw estrone and estriol into biest and triest for no medical reason. Why would you want a fat hormone or a pregnancy hormone? I have no idea. And estrone is considered to be pro-inflammatory and may be linked to more, because the most likely time you're going to get breast cancer is postmenopausal, and your dominant estrogen is estrone because of fat cells, not estriol or estradiol. So I only give my patients estradiol. I don't do any of the synthetics. I really prefer to give them back. And look, all the latest safety data is showing transdermal estradiol is probably the way to go for the best safety profile for clotting, cholesterol, heart risk, all of it. So, and breast cancer.
Okay. No, that's so helpful. Okay. What about a lot of people were asking, and I think this is great. What can you do to prepare? Like if you're 35 or you're 40, like what are the things they can do? I mean, I wish we could go back in time, Dr. Haver, and you and I could be 35 again and do all these things, but what's the best advice for what they can prepare? How do they prepare?
Number one, educate yourself. Do not expect the medical community to do it for you. We're a generation away from that happening. Get my book. There are other books. Learn as much as you can about menopause, because this is inevitable. This is going to happen to you, and it will affect your life probably in ways you never imagined. So just knowing these things might happen, I think would take away some of the fear, lower our cortisol levels that we're like, oh, wait, it's kind of weird. Maybe it's my perimenopause. I think that would be so much better than what the, you know, the rug being pulled out from, you know, the majority of women, you know, especially if they don't have the traditional hot flashes, then you're kind of screwed, because doctors don't know what the hell's going on, that your cholesterol or your itchy ears or your vertigo or your tinnitus or your frozen shoulder or your recurrent UTIs were actually menopause. And you feel like you're not crazy. And you go to your doctor and you're gaslit and dismissed. So number one, educate. Number two, strength over skinny, 100%. Get your body ready for old age. You are working out to stay out of a nursing home and to not fall and break. Okay. That is why you go to the gym. You do cardio for a strong heart and strong mind, and you do weight training for everything else. So number three, nutrition over calories, 100%. If counting calories does not work for you, it is never going to work. And these people who are telling you calories in, calories out, the CECO crowd, are just trying to get your money, and they're not here to help you. They don't care about your health. They just, it's a sickness with these people. And so focus, how much magnesium are you getting? Are you getting enough fiber? What's your protein level at? How are you doing with vitamin D? Like treat your food as fuel to your body and let go of being judged for having great kick-ass curves. You know, I'm telling you, if we didn't have men, I'm sorry, I'm going to man bash, but there's a joke in my community of like, without men, you know, making us feel whatever, we'd have a bunch of curvy, happy women mm-hmm. who are fit, you know, yep. with boobs. Yep.
Back in the olden days, when you look back at old like paintings, when you're like in Europe, women. Yeah, I know. I love their curves. Yeah, it's so good. So speaking of men, my husband has been amazing. So shout out to the great husbands and great boyfriends out there that partners, are helpful during and supportive. Yeah. But so what do you want the men to know? Because I feel like it's so important to include the men in these conversations.
Right. You know,
yeah. What's your advice for the men?
She is going to go through a cataclysmic change in her hormone levels. And just imagine if you woke up at 50 with no testosterone. I'm not talking getting low. I'm talking less than 1% of your 25-year-old range. And that was the rest of your life. And you were forced to deal with the consequences without any hope. That's what she's having to go through with the current medical system right now. Educate your, if you want to be a better partner and more understanding, she's going to need some time to figure this out. Validate her, go to the doctor with her, listen in on the appointments, help her fight for her right to have a menopause-informed discussion. Read my book or the other books, educating yourself about what's going on with her so that you can support her through this time.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of doctors, what's your best advice for all of us to find a good doctor that's going to help us through the menopause journey?
So at thepauselife.com, our website, we have testimonials from my followers who thought they had great care. And we just divide them up by state and city. So you can go look there. The Menopause Society at menopause.org. Look for their list of certified providers, the ones who took the test, not just all the names. They have a list of like everybody who's a member. They didn't take the test. Look for the check by certified, meaning they went through the process of getting certified, which is a big deal. It's like board certification, basically. You know, at least it's still not perfection. Nothing is perfect, but at least they have taken the time, the months it takes to study for this exam, and have shown some kind of an interest. And soon I'm going to be training providers in how to do menopause care like we do in our clinics.
Oh, I love that. That's going to be your new thing in 2024. I love that for you. So what is the good news that you want to leave us with? Because obviously my podcast is Nina's Got Good News. So I know this has been a lot for everyone to take in, but leave us with some good news that we can all come away with feeling hopeful and optimistic about what's ahead with our menopause journeys.
There is, like you said, menopause is having a moment right now, but I don't think mm-hmm. the moment's going to end. And we're seeing a tremendous amount of investment in technology, not all good stuff. In, you know, there, be warned about some of the sketchy products out there promising miracle cures for menopause. They don't work. I'm just going to save you money right now. You yep. know, nothing replaces good nutrition, exercise, healthy habits, stress reduction. All of that must come first. But I am the happiest I've ever been. Mm-hmm. I am the healthiest I've been in years and years and years. I love not having periods anymore. I am done with childbearing. I have a 23 and a 20-year-old, you know, I am done. I am more successful than I've ever been in my life. I have more career satisfaction. I've never educated as many women. I've never, you know, this is all possible. And had I not kind of had a shitty menopause transition and been through the pain so that I could like figure this out, then I wouldn't be here today where I'm at today. So there is light at the end of the tunnel, and this isn't the end of your life. We have to live the rest of our lives as menopausal people, but it can be fabulous, fabulous and healthy, but you got to work at it.
I know. Well, it's so good that you're a little bit ahead of me, because then I look to you for inspiration and I'm like, look at her. I got this. It's so good. It's so helpful. So Dr. Haber, where can everyone follow along? How can they buy your book? I know it's coming out on April 30th. I know you can pre-order it now, but tell us where we can follow along and get the book.
So if you go to thepausethelife.com, we have a book page. Of course, Amazon has it, but I really want to support local booksellers. So we have links to some of the smaller bookstores and chains for you to be able to pick one that works for you. You can find me all over social media at Mary Claire, Dr. Mary Claire, Mary Claire Haber, MD, Facebook, Instagram, all the places. I'm everywhere. And then our website at thepausethelife.com, we have resources, blogs, quizzes, like all sorts of stuff for you to try and live your best life possible.
I love that. What's your favorite platform right now, Dr. Haber? What are you loving?
I think Instagram is really growing fast for us, and it's where I have the most rapport and engagement.
Yep. I love that. So good. Do you have anyone that you're following right now that's like one of your favorite follows? Someone that you love to follow?
There's a couple. Corinne Men, Dr. Men, OBGYN. She's a breast cancer survivor and a menopause specialist. And she is just my goat. She's like my sister now. Like, amazing. Kelly Casperson for sexual health and wellness. Rachel Rubin for sexual health and wellness. Sharon Malone is phenomenal, especially for diversity. I mean, like these are my menopause sisters. Mm-hmm. And our little, and Vonda Wright, she's an orthopedic surgeon who is all about menopause and frailty prevention and fracture prevention. Like, these are the people that feed my soul right now and all worth to follow. They have such good information.
I love that. I love it. We're going to be kept out of that nursing home. So it's so good. But Dr. Haber, thank you so much for coming on and helping all of us so much. I cannot thank you enough for just being you and putting this out there for all of us to help all of us and educate all of us. It's really incredible. And I just want to thank you again for coming on today. And again, congrats on the new book, our new bedside table reading. So thank you again so much.
Mwah. You're so welcome.
You're the best. Can't wait to see you on tour. And thank you again.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to my mom's podcast. Remember, you can find Nina's Got Good News on iTunes and Spotify. Also on Google Play, Stitcher, and Outkast. And now we are also on Pandora. Please be sure to subscribe. Also rate and review all her podcasts too. And be sure to share it with a friend. The mission of this podcast is to get better together as a community in the audio space. Please follow my mom on Instagram. Her handle is Nina B. Clark. Don't forget, Clark has an E at the end of it. For now, I'm Blaine Clark. Thank you again for listening, and let's just keep being awesome. XOXO.